A quick word from our sponsor. During Chad Daybell's trial, many continue to ask where I shop. So I am finally coming clean with my wardrobe hack. I rent most of the clothes I wear. Armoire has allowed me to avoid expensive luggage fees as I've traveled back and forth to Boise for Chad's trial. And with a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you build the perfect wardrobe with high quality brands just for you. You take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your personalized closet delivered straight to your door in as little as 2 days. And then when you're ready for new clothes and ready for someone else to do your laundry, you just swap them out for fresh styles. Armoire has allowed me to branch out and try new styles out of my comfort zone. And I love shopping for new clothes every month. So renting from Armoire is a win-win. And then I send it back for more. Right now, our gems can give Armoire a try to get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/hiddentruecrime. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/hiddentruecrime to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Hello, Hidden Gems. It's Lauren and Dr. John, co-hosts and spouses, states apart. Because I am in Boise, Idaho, and just attended Chad Daybell's sentencing. I also attended 2 months of his trial, from jury selection to the guilty verdict to today, and his sentencing. He received the death penalty for murdering JJ, Vallo, Tylee, Ryan, and Tammy Daybell. I used to end each of my lunch lives with "May justice be served," and today it was served. I don't know if it's necessarily, you know, something to smile about. As Colby Ryan said in his statement outside the courthouse, you can't change the outcome of what happened, but it does feel like a way to begin healing and a closure of this chapter for many of the surviving victims. Been a nightmare, a 5-year nightmare for many, and this closes a major chapter. How are you doing, John?
I'm doing fine, I guess. I mean, I think endings like this are always a little bittersweet. Yes. On the one hand, you have justice, which we've all been waiting for a long time. On the other hand, you have another life that potentially is going to be taken, and no matter how heinous that situation was or how repugnant we think Chad Daybell is, and he's pretty bad, by the way, it's always a little bittersweet that, you know, the death penalty is always difficult because, you know, you're ending another life potentially, and that's hard. I guess moments like this can be difficult for me because they really cause me to kind of reflect on the human condition a little bit, and just not just the victims, the perpetrators and the murderers, the whole thing. And, you know, it I think in moments like this, I wonder if human beings can do better. You know, is this what we are, right? That's part of my profession. I think there's always an element here of sadness and loss all around, not just for the victims and their families and everyone affected by this and for the community of which we're a part, but perpetrators are involved in that as well. And it always makes me question how we can do better as human beings and how we can prevent these situations in the future. You know, whether is violence intrinsically a part of our nature? Is that something we can ever expunge from who we are? I don't know. These are big questions that always come up in these types of moments. But I feel content that there was justice. I feel like the jury delivered a reasonable outcome based on the information they had, and they believe justice was served. And so I think that in this moment, I think that's really important.
Thank you, John. I spent lunch with, it was incredible with the Douglas family, Williams, the Ryans, Colby and Kelsey, and the Woodcocks. Families that never, ever knew each other, right? Well, minus the Douglases and the Williams. But families that never necessarily, and the Ryans and the Woodcocks, but families that never thought they would all connect and never certainly wanted to connect over this. But I will say it's been really touching to me to see how the surviving victims have reached across the aisle at one another, you know, to break bread today. And, you know, Aunt Vicky as well and her husband.
Yeah. And obviously my heart goes out to all the victims. You know what, you and I, you were there, but I watched the victim impact statements, and, you know, you and I have befriended some of the people giving those statements, and, you know, they're heartbreaking. They're always heartbreaking. But, you know, again, there's no victory because we can't bring the victims back. We can't, right? So I hope one of the themes obviously was that many of them felt like they weren't able to find some measure of peace, and maybe this outcome will allow them to begin the long journey of trying to find some peace, which is always difficult. But yeah, I don't, you know, the whole, it's all very difficult. Was this, I think it was a just outcome, and it brings, you know, it brings to a close, at least for the moment, and probably not emotionally, but it, at least in terms of having a judicial outcome, it brings a long process to an end.
Yes. You have been watching all week. John watched the verdict come down. John watched, as you said, all of the victim impact statements. And you watched the sentencing. And we have questions.
Okay.
And we want to know what your thoughts are.
Then. Let's start with the verdict, because we haven't talked about that yet. So, and again, the camera is not the best quality. So, I mean, I went back and watched I watched the video again in terms of how Chad was responding to what was being said and how he responded to the verdict. In some ways, because it's not high definition, you know, it's hard to really zero in on some of his nonverbals. But I do think that for the most part, he was pretty stoic when the verdict was read. And obviously he knew that the likely outcome of a guilty verdict could be the death penalty. So he knew the consequences of that. I will say that towards the very, very end, when the last charge was read and there was a guilty finding, I do think that I detected a little bit of fear. I think there was a slight change in Chad's demeanor. I think there was a slight glimmer of fear and maybe even sadness. It looked like his eyes were tearing up a little bit. I mean, he didn't shed any tears, but to me, that was a really interesting moment, because I wondered if in that moment he believed that maybe he should have done something differently, or maybe he had a moment of remorse or regret. And, you know, it didn't last very long. It was kind of a small window. And of course, then when they got into the death penalty and death penalty arguments, of course, that all disappeared quickly. But, and we'll talk about that too. But I think those moments, if I'm right about that, and I don't know, you were in the courtroom, so you could see it more clearly than I could, but, or Pryor could, because Pryor was right next to him. But, you know, it did feel like there was this fear, like, you know, that he was afraid for his future. And there might have been a little bit of sadness. And I think those moments, again, like I said, just said a minute ago, I think those moments make these situations bittersweet, in the sense that, you know, it's easy to dehumanize someone like Chad Daybell, or, you know, to see him as a monster, or, and maybe all that's true. People can have their opinions on that, but he's a human being, and there's these moments of fear and sadness that make him human. And that's what makes this hard. You know, how does a human being, and you and I have tried to answer this through our podcast, but how does a human being get to the point where they feel compelled to murder children and spouses, right? And go on this killing spree, and yet still retain potentially moments of their humanity? To me, that's one of the bigger questions I always deal with. We've talked about this a lot, but I think that moment, if I'm accurate about what I saw with Chad, you know, and again, it didn't last very long, by the way. It was a really small window. That moment, I think, is what makes these these situations so difficult, because I wonder in those moments, you know, maybe if circumstances were different, or maybe if certain elements of his childhood are different, right? That perhaps we never would have had to go through this whole process, and perhaps people would still be alive. So maybe if he was more capable of experiencing that type of sadness or fear without being afraid of it, without anger, maybe we wouldn't be here. So I guess one of my messages tonight would be that, you know, it's okay. It's okay to feel vulnerable. It's okay to have fear. It's okay to have sadness. You know, that's what makes us human. And, you know, sometimes when we avoid those things, it can take us to dark places. So,
yeah, thank you. And I want you to know, it looks like Colby is also here today. Okay. I know you.
Hey, Colby. Thank you for your statement. It was quite moving.
It was. Thank you. We wish you the best, you and your family.
Yeah.
Beyond the fear, what else did you see, John? Well, or should we start with the sentencing, or where do you want to start?
That's really, so the verdict, when the verdict came down, he was pretty stoic. There wasn't a lot of motion, except for maybe that 1 minute window, maybe, where it did seem like there was a little bit of fear. It did seem like he was tearing up a little bit. Other than that, you know, he's been pretty emotionless and pretty unrepentant. And I, you know, I'll talk about it in a minute, how that's a problem in terms of, I think, and I'll just, we'll talk about this more later, but I think that if Chad Daybell wanted to save his life, the best way he could have done that is to have said something and to have shown some remorse and to take responsibility, right? Because the theme that Pryor and Chad Daybell keep coming up with is, it's not Chad's fault. He didn't do anything wrong, right? They're blaming Lori for everything. And that's not, you know, when you're fighting for your life, that's not a good look. That's not a good strategy. It always amazes me that human beings in these situations would rather take the death penalty than express remorse and show some vulnerability and take responsibility. It's incredible. I've done evaluations with sex offenders and violent offenders for many years. And one of the things towards the end of every evaluation, one of the questions I have to ask them is, are you open to treatment? Are you open to therapy for what you've done? And, you know, this includes a lot of offenders that admit no responsibility for anything, but I still ask them that. Even though you're denying that you committed this crime, would you be open to therapy? And that's an important question, by the way, because the offenders that are open to therapy are much more likely to get probation if that's an option. So I've had offenders, felons, many who I've evaluated, and I ask them that question, and they say, no, absolutely not. I will not go to treatment. And I'll say to them, I'll say, look, you know, you're a first-time offender. More than likely, if you were open to treatment and you were willing to kind of look at what you did here and own up to it, you could get probation. You could be released into the community. And I can't tell you the number of times I've heard from, I promise you this is true, felons who have said, I would rather spend a decade in prison than go into therapy and have to talk about my emotions or talk about my crimes. And I mean, I'll ask him again, like, okay, you know, let me clarify what you're saying here, because this is going to be in the report that you refuse treatment no matter what, right? And they'll say, yep, that's true. I will not go into treatment. And so I think you have a version of that here, that you have a life and death situation, and Chad Daybell essentially has to, you know, put down his pride and his ego, you know, for a little bit and stand before the jury and say, I messed up, right? I take responsibility. I am so sorry. I am so sorry for all the destruction I caused. But he can't do it, right? He's incapable of it. And so it's amazing. You know, it continually astonishes me that people would rather cling to their egos and their narcissism rather than, you know, just face up to what they've done or confront their emotions in some realistic manner.
That is interesting. Yeah. If you just said, I'm sorry, this is the man that didn't take a plea deal. And plea deals are always an option when somebody, for the most part, has a death penalty on the table.
Yeah, and you and I know, right, exactly. You and I know that I'm sure that at some point over the past few years, I would guess that the prosecution, I mean, we don't know details. We've heard a few things, but the prosecution probably went to Chad and offered him some deals. And more than likely, the deal would have been life in prison without the possibility of parole. And no death penalty, right? And that would have saved everyone a lot of time and energy. And he continually refused that. So I'm sure. And now we see why. Because this is the guy who can't stand up and express remorse or take responsibility for his crimes. He's obstinate until the bitter end. He's obstinate. And it's amazing how people like Chad Daybell, and I could generalize this to felons, but you know, people that have, let's say, narcissistic qualities or maybe even psychopathic qualities. I'm not saying he's either of those. I'm just saying qualities here. How they just leave this utter trail of destruction behind them, and they don't care. And they don't care. And they leave this trail of destruction and tears and, you know, upend lives, as we heard from the victim impact statements. And there's just this utter indifference because they're so wrapped up in their own egos, or they're wrapped up in being right all the time. So here you have another instance of that, that the trauma and the destruction people like this are willing to inflict is unimaginable. Psychopaths in general, I'm not talking about Chad Daybell here, but psychopaths have an enormously negative impact on their communities, way more than the typical person in a community. And it's sad, and it's you know, it's just unimaginable.
I heard what you did there.
What did I do?
Well, you said the word psychopath.
Yeah,
we'll leave it at that.
But I didn't say Chad Daybell was necessarily one, but yes.
I know, but you didn't say he wasn't.
I can neither confirm nor deny that Chad Daybell is a psychopath.
I have to go forward with what you just said. This is a man who didn't show any emotion during the victim impact statements. Now, I realize he's the perpetrator, you know, the defendant, not a victim. These are people that he knew that were part of his family for 30 years crying. And they're crying about missing Tammy. They're not even yelling at him, because the victim impact statements, if you notice, actually didn't mention Chad Daybell. They actually only talked about their loss, because that's all they could. And I don't know if people noticed that, but all these victim impact statements could do is talk about their loss and how it has affected them to lose JJ or Tylee or Tammy. But let's specifically talk about the ones about Tammy, because Tammy was Chad Daybell's family, his wife for 30 years, who he once called his one and only. And these people weeping over Tammy were his brother-in-laws and sister-in-laws and his father-in-law. And they were crying and they were in pain, and he didn't flinch. The entire gallery, strangers were crying. Some Hidden Gems wrote us and said they had to pull over while listening in the car because they were crying over the loss of three people that they never knew. And Chad Daybell just sat there. What is that?
Well, again, this goes back to what I was just talking about. I think you had this moment of vulnerability after the verdict was read, but that window closed quickly. That this is someone who, for the most part, is unemotional. He's defiant. We'll talk about that more later. Clearly, he's got some antisocial qualities. He tends to be a bit narcissistic. Remember we talked about there's this taunting element too. There's this hostility. Remember when during closing arguments, I talked about how he was making these gestures that were completely inappropriate to the moment?
Yes. His poker face was gone, and he was shaking his head and nodding. Yes.
I said he was doing like the, you know, he did like the fist pump. When Pryor had one of his big supposed epiphanal moments and said that Chad was the target of the so-called paint gun incident and not Tammy, right? That was supposed to be a game-changing moment for Pryor. Chad basically did, you know, Chad was all over that. Chad's nonverbals were completely different than they'd been all trial. In fact, he didn't do a fist pump, but I mean, he did a version of that. He nodded his head, and it was not the kind of behavior you'd expect from a defendant in a criminal trial fighting for his life. I mean, to show that kind of behavior to the jury in this circumstance is a very hostile act, in the sense that he's thumbing his nose at the prosecution. He's mocking the prosecution and saying essentially, see, I gotcha. Mm-hmm. I'm right. And I mean, so we saw that. So that is consistent with everything we've talked about, the hostility that, like, he's literally, and Pryor did it the other day. Pryor went back and literally taunted the jury. Pryor essentially said to the jury, when fighting for Chad Daybell's life, Pryor essentially said to the jury, I know you've already made your decision. Think about that. Who says that? Like, I know you made your decision, but now I'm going to show you. Now I'm going to remind you of how wrong you were in your decision. And I'm going to give you the same, wrong, stupid arguments to convince you.
Bomb that came into his life was a woman who previously had been married 4 times. And that bomb brought chaos to Chad Daybell's life, maybe being manipulated. And we can argue this all day long. But when it comes to personal relationships, he wasn't a worldly man. And on the other hand, the trajectory that's coming through, the trajectory that's flying into this 29-year marriage, is a woman who didn't have 1, 2, 3, 4 marriages. That's worldly experience. That's a lot of things. There's a lot of things going on there.
I didn't convince you the first time, but we're going to go revisit the fact that Chad was a victim.
Yes.
We're going to go revisit the fact that, to use his language, that Lori Vallow was a bomb that brought chaos into his life. We're going to go revisit the fact that Lori caused all of this destruction. It was all Lori's fault. So, he's taunting the jury. You think the jury probably already doesn't like this guy.
And we can argue this all day long.
Because he comes across as abrasive, and he comes across as smug and arrogant. Like, you don't want your attorney to be the way John Pryor is. I mean, and in fairness to Pryor, he tried. Like, he's a one-man band. He didn't have the resources of the state. I mean, he did what he could.
And we can argue this all day long.
And he had these humble moments where he'd throw in, like, the thing about when his mic wasn't working, he talked about, I don't even know how to use electronics, right? Like,
skill with electronics is showing and has shown throughout this, I guess, correct?
But I mean, those moments,
neither does the cozy coat.
I always dreamt of being a fisherman, right? With a 30-inch waist.
I wanted to be a professional fisherman. Not really good at fishing. Wasn't going to work out. Wasn't going to make a lot of money, but it can still be a dream. I always wanted a 30-inch waist. That's not happening, folks. It's just not going to happen. I'm too old and maybe not as motivated as I should be. But we all have dreams. Now, how do we know these are dreams that Chad talks about?
Like, no, stop it. You're not helping, right? If you're going to bring in humor, don't bring in that humor. It's not working. Well,
in that sense, it was kind of like, yeah, so did Chad Daybell. Chad Daybell also had these strange fantasies, about some midlife crisis and the perfect woman, and I don't know. Yeah, it was a little too reminiscent of the guy who was defending.
So you have Pryor taunting the jury, basically saying, "Look, I know you made your decision." And also, when he says it, he's being like condescending. Oh, I know you've made your decision. He's rolling his eyes. I mean, how does he think a jury's going to respond to that?
Right.
I know you've made your decision, but hey, I'm here to correct you again. Even though I'm making the same argument I made the other day that you just rejected, but let's try again because I'm right and my ego won't let me, put this away.
And we can argue this all day long.
And I've got to force this on you again. I've got no boundaries, so I'm gonna push this false narrative on you again until you accept it. That's narcissism.
Yeah. Right.
Just let it go, dude. Your guy got convicted on every count. And they came back in less than 2 hours. Like, put it away, dude. Like, it's too late. If you want to save your client's life, don't taunt the jury. Right? Like, I don't.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, man. I don't. Maybe they don't teach that in law school, obviously. But I was blown away by that. If the cycle of yo-yo dieting is familiar to you, you're not alone. What if you could take a weekly shot to lose weight and keep it off? That's where Row comes in. Row provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. The Row Body Program pairs a weekly shot with lifestyle changes so you can lose weight and keep it off. Row handles it all, even the insurance paperwork. You can sign up online from home with no doctor's visits. The average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. Go to row.co/hidden. And you'll pay just $99 for the first month and $145 a month after that. The medication costs are separate. Once again, that's row.co/hidden.
A quick word from today's sponsor. Did you know that the average dieter will try 162 diets over the course of their lives? Sono Bello is the only way to permanently lose unwanted fat and inches. Sono Bello doctors are masters in micro laser fat removal. Wherever you have stubborn fat, tummy, sides, thighs, arms, it's going away permanently in one visit. You can also ask about their modern techniques to eliminate sagging, loose skin. When it comes to feeling good, I always say do what feels best for you and only you, no one else. And if you've ever thought about or are curious about the personal benefits of Sono Bello, you can schedule a free consultation to learn all about micro laser fat removal. Sono Bello is actually running a special right now. Visit sonobello.com/hiddentruecrime. Sono Bello, BELLO.com/hiddentruecrime to schedule your free consultation. Visit sonobello.com/hiddentruecrime. SONOBELLO.com/hiddentruecrime. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Investing can feel intimidating and people don't know where to start. And many think you need a lot of money to invest. Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing for your future. You do not need a lot of money or expertise to invest with Acorns. In fact, you can get started with just your spare change. Acorns recommends an expert-built portfolio that fits you and your money goals, then automatically invests your money for you. For me, investing often gets put off because it doesn't seem urgent and busy lives mean little time to research and manage investments. But you can head to acorns.com/hiddentruecrime or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today. Paid non-client endorsement compensation provided incentive to positively promote Acorns. Investing involves risk. Acorn Advisors LLC and SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/hiddentruecrime.
This is a guy who, like his client, Chad Daboll was taunting the jury too in some to some degree. And we'll talk about the ending of this whole thing in a minute. But holy cow! I mean, maybe client and defense attorney were similar, right? Like,
yeah,
maybe they were too alike. Maybe that's why there was no plea deal, because these two were so, in many ways, these two were so similar. And I'm not calling Pryor a murderer, by the way, but I'm just talking about worldview here, that they couldn't take a deal because they really thought that their defense was a winning strategy.
And we can argue this all day long.
In spite of,
you think Pryor did too, or do you think he was helping his client the best of his ability? If his client refused to take a deal,
I think it goes beyond that. If I had to guess, because Pryor, the other was another telling moment during this trial where Pryor talked about, I forget the context now, but that he was talking about fame, and he made a comment like, I forget, maybe you remember, he made a comment like something about fame came up, and he said, I don't need any more fame. I've got enough of that.
And at some point, when you start writing books and you go to these preparing the people conferences and you meet all of these people and you feel like, well, maybe I become a little bit of a celebrity. Okay. In this case, I don't want to become a celebrity. I've had enough now at this point. But, you know, Chad writes books.
Yeah. I mean, that was an interesting moment. You told me that moment. Was that a Freudian slip?
I mean, no, it's more than that. It's like he's telling us, okay, so you weren't doing this for money. You were apparently, I think what he's saying is that was part of it. He's doing this for ego, no doubt. Part of it's ego. And so, yeah, it's true. It's possible Chad Chad said, no deal, no deal. I'm never taking a deal. But I think, I don't know if that's accurate. I think Pryor thought he had a winning defense strategy, and that if Chad was acquitted, that he'd be the hero. You know, he'd be the next Johnny Cochran. He'd be always remembered for the guy who got the murderer that everyone hated acquitted.
He's no Johnny.
Well, he missed his Fitbit moment. You know, he could have had an OJ line in there, but he missed it. If you're cheating on your Fitbit, you must acquit. That should have been his Johnny Cochran moment, I guess, but he missed it. I want to share for the people that didn't watch the victim impact statements. I don't want to read all of them. I mean, they were all quite moving, but I want to share a few moments because there were some of the lines were really exceptional.
Please. Thank you.
So Kay, obviously, Kay was great. Thank you, Kay. Kay, quote, "The pain is indescribable. The hole in my heart can never be filled." Colby, a part of Colby's statement, I should point out the irony here, because Pryor, in his closing argument against why Chad should get the death penalty, Pryor used the term bomb, that Lori Vallow, quote, "A bomb brought chaos into his life, into Chad's life." So here you have Pryor to Colby saying that Lori dropped a bomb into everyone's life, including Chad's. And then Colby said, quote, "I've lost everything I've ever known. It's like a nuclear bomb dropping." That was, to me, that was really touching, especially after the Pryor bomb analogy. Like, no, Lori didn't drop a bomb. Like, if you want to know what a bomb dropped in someone's life looks like, look at Colby. That's a bomb being dropped in someone's life. That bomb was not dropped in Chad Daybell's life. So I think the contrast there, to me, because I remembered Pryor saying that the previous day, the contrast there was enormous, right? Like, don't start using analogies like dropping a bomb and changing Chad's life when it's not accurate, number one. And number two, the irony is I also thought about Colby in the Netflix documentary, which is where I met Colby. And I appreciate, Colby's great, by the way. Colby's a great guy. I really am glad I had a chance to meet him. And we had a good talk during the filming of the Netflix documentary. But the irony, too, of that is that show, Sins of Her Mother, which is the Netflix documentary about the Daybell case, the basic argument that the Cox family makes in that documentary is that when Chad Daybell entered Lori's life, that Lori's life was upended. That Chad was the bomb that came into Lori's life that created chaos, not the other way around, right? And so think about that. So you've got here on the one hand, Chad is arguing that Lori ruined his life. And then on the other hand, Lori's not saying this, but her family is saying this. They're saying, and Colby included in the documentary said that, well, when Chad came into Lori's life, he was that bomb. He was that thing that ruined her life, essentially, and set her on a different path. So you've got two different versions of the same situation. And I thought of that too. So I appreciate Colby sharing that analogy. I thought it was really powerful. Samantha, I thought Samantha was great. Everyone was really good, but I'm just going to point out a few things here that
Samantha, Tammy's sister.
Samantha, quote, "The lies, deception, and murder have ripped our family apart, and we do not feel peace. There is no peace for anybody." And I kind of feel that way myself. Like, I don't know that's the difficulty and the complexity of cases like this. I don't know that peace is easily found by anybody, spectators, family, right? That's one of the challenges, I think, is how do you find peace in a situation like this? Michael Douglas, the incredible statement. He was very moving. Everybody was, but Michael was the last person to talk, and just the absolute devastation on his life. Quote, yeah. "I've had my peace stolen. I am wounded, broken, sad, angry, disgusted, betrayed, and looking for answers on the constant pain of grief and loss." What an amazing sentence. "I am wounded, broken, sad, angry, disgusted, betrayed, and looking for answers on the constant pain of grief and loss." So I don't, you know, with statements like that, with all of these statements, I think, it, you know, it's, at that point, and after closing arguments, and the closing arguments, by the way, were exceptional. The prosecution really put together a strong case, and the closing arguments, I think, really tied it all together. Lindsay Blake did a great job. They all did. I mean, they all worked as a team, but for them to craft closing arguments that were so well done was really amazing. Law enforcement did a great job. You know, I give a shout out to law enforcement on this case. Amazing job. So many people did such incredible jobs. These victims' impact statements were incredible. Of course, Kay and Larry, you know, really gave a voice to the voiceless. Kay and Larry really kept this alive for so long and invested so much. I can't thank them enough, you know, for what they did and the difference they made. So those, I just wanted to share some of those because I was quite moved by all of those statements.
I was too. There wasn't a dry eye in the courtroom except for on Chad Daybell.
Yeah. What about Pryor? I'm sure he was.
I don't know. Someone saw him maybe wipe a tear. And someone saw Judge Boyce and Ingrid Beatty, but not Chad.
Yeah, so let's get back to Chad. So after the death penalty, the sentencing is read, and clearly it wasn't good for him. He gets the death penalty, and Judge Boyce acts. He has to speak. Just he has to say one word, whether he's going to make a statement. And he says no. Pryor puts the mic over by Chad, and he says no. But interestingly enough, I think that moment was so fascinating because he says no in a voice that I think is almost quivering.
At this time, I will ask because I need to on these counts. Before I impose any sentence, Mr. Daybell, you do have the right of allocution, which permits you to make a statement on your own behalf in any mitigation of these offenses. Is there any statement you would like to make before I proceed with sentencing on those counts?
No.
It's shaky. It's not a particularly confident no.
No.
I mean, you might be saying I'm reading too much into a simple word, but he's not saying that with a lot of authority. I think that's a no.
No.
That's filled with fear. I think he's angry. I think at that point he's just seething with anger. You can't, he's trying to control it, but I think there's a lot of fear there.
No.
And it seems like, you know, I think there's almost a surreal quality to him. I think there's a little bit of surprise for Chad. I think he felt like Pryor nailed his defense, and I really felt like he thought he was going to be acquitted.
Yeah.
So I think there is this element of shock and fear.
No.
I agree. I saw emotion for the first time, and I saw fear. Perhaps, or shock as well.
And oddly enough, you know, I think that one word, if you go back and listen to the way he says no,
no,
he doesn't say it with any authority. Right? His voice is kind of cracking a little bit. It's interesting. I might be reading a lot into that. I probably am. But if you look at his nonverbals and the way he says that, I think you do see there's definitely some fear there. Which goes back to my, after the verdict was read, kind of that I think there's a moment of fear there too, understandably. I'd be remiss, by the way, if I'm talking about fear and Chad Daybell, I'd be remiss if I didn't quote Yoda from Star Wars. I love Yoda. So
okay.
Yoda on fear. This is a famous line from Yoda. For those Star Wars fans, you're going to know this. But the context here is that Anakin Skywalker, who we all know later to be Darth Vader, expresses the fear of losing his mother. So that's an important point here. And Yoda says, quote, fear is the path to the dark side. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering. And also, I just watched Dune Part 2. So I had seen Dune Part 1 previously, but the second part just came out. And one of the great lines from Dune and from the original book from the 70s is that fear is the mind killer. And so I think the reason I bring this up is because, you know, I love Yoda, but I think for Chad Daybell, a lot of this has to do with fear, and seeing that fear pop up again during the trial, I think was interesting, because I think in many ways, if you consider how Chad Daboll gets in this predicament, it's not altogether different than Anakin Skywalker or Darth Vader fearing the loss of his mother. When he gets involved with Laurie Daboll, there's this tremendous fear of rejection by Laurie. And we saw that in the love text threads. There's this fear of losing her. There's this fear of keeping her invested. There's this fear of failure. There's this fear of uncertainty about the apocalypse and the second coming, right? There's this fear of the unknown. And you and I have talked about in our podcast, there's this fear of mortality. Chad Daboll is approaching midlife. He's worried about his legacy. He's writing these books. You have all this fear, I think, with Chad Daboll. And I think some of that plays some role in these crimes. I think that part of the reason these children get murdered is because Chad's afraid of Laurie rejecting him, and he wants her to be completely invested in him. And one of the ways he can ensure that she is to ask her to do the unthinkable. If she's willing to assist in murdering her children, then he knows that she's all in with him. That's fear-driven. Again, back to Dune. Fear is the mind killer. Back to Yoda. Fear is the path to the dark side. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering. And so we've seen a lot of hate here for no reason at all. Hate based upon a false belief system that has created all the suffering that we're now dealing with. Hate leads to suffering. We're all suffering. And even though this verdict is justice, I think there's still a lot of suffering.
What else? I'm here to listen. These are all the things I've been wanting to know. I've been wanting to know what you've been thinking as much as everyone else here. They've been hearing from me every day for 2 months.
I think those were sort of my main talking points.
What about what happened at the end?
Oh, yeah, the end. Right. So, yeah, what an amazing moment. So the sentencing's ending, and Chad Pryor reaches over to shake Chad's hand. So let me preface this with that there are times when you and I talk about how sometimes there's little snippets or statements that people say that are so important for capturing who they are. Sometimes there's these little moments of behavior that are so important for understanding someone's personality or who they are. And this is one of those moments. So it's a moment, by the way, that if you weren't paying attention, it could go by so quickly. But holy cow, when I saw that, I was stunned. And so for those who are going to hear this and not see it, so what happens is Judge Boyce requests that everyone rise, and Chad Daboll starts pushing himself out of the chair, and then he falls back in his chair. And so essentially Chad Daboll refuses to stand up and acknowledge the court's formal directive to rise and respect the court, right, and to respect the process. Chad Daboll stays seated. The question you might ask is, why is this important? Because everything I just talked about Chad Daboll, about being defiant and hostile and fearful and oppositional, you see it here. You'll recall, Lauren, that early on in this trial, you were reaching for your phone and it looked like you weren't standing for a moment, right? And what happened?
Yes, Judge Boyce was very, very upset and suggested that me and my a neighbor that he also felt was not standing should not come back that day in court.
Right. So you apologized. You acknowledged it was a simple mistake. Like there was nothing deliberate that you were doing to disrespect the court, right? But not here. Chad Daboll stood every single time until today. In the very last moment of the very last court session, Chad Daboll remained seated, which was, I can't even tell you the degree to which that is absolute disdain for this court and for this verdict and for this judge and for this jury. And if you want to know who Chad Daboll is, go back to that moment, because that is Chad Daboll. If I had to summarize Chad Daboll now with a couple of moments from the trial, they would be the texts where Chad says he wants to turn up the pain on the children. So that sadistic moment about let's turn up the pain and suffering on the kids, that number one. And number two, this moment. I mean, I guess you could argue that he's got nothing to lose. What's Judge Boyce going to do? Put him to death? Right? Like, at this moment, he doesn't care. It still shows who he is.
Yeah.
It shows the level of anger and disdain and hostility that Chad Daboll harbors and is willing to show. And he does it, by the way, he does it in an extremely passive-aggressive manner. So, you know, you have some defendants who might absolutely lose their composure and attack the bench or something like that. But Chad Daboll's not that guy. So for all those people who say, well, he's so quiet and he's so reserved, and yeah, okay, maybe. But that doesn't mean he's not hostile. That doesn't mean he's not oppositional.
Yeah.
To me, that's an extraordinary conclusion to this trial, because Chad Daboll is showing you who he is, why he committed these crimes, and what he's capable of. And he's also showing you how defiant he is, how unrepentant, how remorseless, right? You're seeing the guy that's capable of killing a bunch of people. All he's doing is confirming the jury's decision. He's affirming that they made the right decision by doing this type of thing. And, you know, not that he's going to have any chance on appeal, but that's not going to help him.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.